I got an official caution from the police. People were sort of going, oh, here's more of these bloody Australians coming over here telling us what to do and how to do it. Chris Evans did go through a very big sort of lost in showbiz stage, which I did as well.
Conversations, an occasional radio moment series in which we talk to those who made a difference. John O'Corman.
I was 7 years old when we turned up in Sydney, so it was a six-week cruise over, like a second honeymoon for my parents. Unfortunately, it wasn't quite like that because I broke my leg 5 days before we left England, so I missed out on seeing It's a Hard Day's Night at the movies. Basically, my mum and dad and my sister and I, we all grew up in London, from North London, Southgate, and my dad and my mum said, right, especially my dad, he was going, let's go over to the Bahamas, let's go and live in France, let's do something else. And the answer seemed to be, Australia will take us. And we went and had our interviews at Australia House in London, accepted as a job that was needed because he was a chiropodist and physiotherapist, I guess, as they say these days, a foot doctor. He was sick of looking at people's feet in London and thought, where can I do something else where I don't have to look at people's feet, maybe with a bit of sunshine? We got on the boat in Southampton, said goodbye to all the relatives and friends in the UK, got on the Sipmar line on the Fair Sky with lots of Scottish people and Welsh people and Irish people, and arrived in Sydney. I guess it was about 1964 or 65. I went to junior school when I started that, but I was always listening to the radio, even growing up as a kid in London. I used to always listen to Radio Luxembourg and all those kind of, you know, even the BBC Home Service and the Light Program and all that kind of stuff. Grew up loving the Goon shows and Round the Horn and all that classic sort of BBC comedy.
This is the BBC Home Service, and here is a photograph of me saying it.
Thank you, Freeze Green.
I used to listen to the radio, and then when my dad got a tape recorder, I started making those little tapes or recording things off the radio or doing little kind of DJ bits in between the music and, you know, being like a pretend disc jockey or a pretend announcer. And that sort of came from listening to early BBC announcers, because this was when we left England, it was before commercial radio. So there was BBC or BBC, and then only two TV channels from memory of when I left England. There was ITV and there was BBC, and then we got to Australia and there was four TV channels and lots of commercial radio stations and, of course, the ABC. So I had something to listen to when I got here as well. Even when we got to Australia, you could listen to the BBC World Service. And I remember when we left England, Mum and Dad packed everything up in, you know, big sea chests and cases, and the old radio came with us, one of the big old radios, and we weren't sure whether it was going to work. When we were coming across on the boat in Port Said or whatever, however you pronounce it, when we came across the old way before the Six-Day War, so we came through the Suez Canal, and my parents bought me a little transistor radio, and it had like a little earpiece so I could listen to it on the boat. So I used to listen to anything and everything, because in those days it was either medium wave or long wave, so I could listen to all sorts of stuff. And then when we got to Sydney, I just continued my love of radio. But it was interesting because even the ABC, which is the Australian Broadcasting Commission, they played a lot of the BBC shows, so I could still listen to the Goons and the kind of panel shows and quiz shows that used to be on the radio regularly on the weekends.
Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons.
We lived in a sort of beachside suburb of Sydney, so we lived sort of Bronte, Clovelly. I went to Clovelly Public School, and I was just amazed at how many places in Australia were named after places in the UK. So Clovelly and, you know, Newcastle and Launceston, or Launceston as they call it in the UK. I would still do my little tapes and sort of spin in records from the family record player. And I think it was just before cassettes started coming out. My dad had a reel-to-reel, like a Grundig reel-to-reel sort of home recorder that we used to do tapes and send them back to relatives in the UK. So that's where I kind of got my early sort of microphone technique, I guess, of talking into the little microphone on the Grundig. Say hello to Auntie Millie in North London, or say hello to Uncle Godfrey or whatever. I've always been interested in music. My sister's 5 years older than me, so she used to bring home the Peter, Paul and Mary albums, or the Mamas and the Papas, or the Beatles, or the Rolling Stones, or Jerry and the Pacemakers. In fact, I'm such a sad person. I've still got my sister Sharon's Jerry and the Pacemakers album, and I think I've got her Bob Dylan.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me.
So I got into music at a pretty early age, then started getting piano lessons, and then started playing in a band in Sydney when I was about 11 or 12. So I've always had the musical bug and playing in a band. So when I left school, I left high school, I did the sort of school leaving certificate, the high school certificate, and then my parents said, look, you can stay on for another 2 years and do the higher school certificate, or you can go to art school, because I'd already started doing art classes. So my major sort of plan was like, I'll become a commercial artist or graphic designer. So I did a graphic design course, but at the same time I was playing in a little sort of rock and roll blues band. Then my first job was kind of Thursday night and Saturday morning working at a record shop at Bondi Junction, not far from Bondi Beach. Bondi Junction, there was a big chain of shops along the kind of English-style department stores, and it was called Grace Brothers, just like in Are You Being Served? And it was, I was working in the record department at Grace Brothers at Bondi Junction, and you used to be able to get like 45 singles would be about $1.50 or $2. Albums, I think, were about $5. So a lot of the time I would either borrow the album and then bring them back, because as a staff member you're allowed to borrow albums and bring them back. Not that, of course, you wouldn't tape them, because that would be illegal. But I used to spend most of the money I made on Thursday nights and Saturday mornings in the record shop. Most of my wages would go on product and buying records and stuff. And I'm still one of those people that has most of my vinyl from days as a radio DJ, when you used to get given all the promo copies of albums, and then the promo copies of CDs when they came out. So I've always been a lover of music, whether it's other people's music or being lucky enough to play in a few bands that recorded. I was working at an advertising agency in Sydney called Schofield Sherborne Baker, and I worked for them, and I worked for various ones like J. Walter Thompson's and Young and Rubicam, and so I was primarily a copywriter working with an art director. But because I was a copywriter, they'd say, oh, look, you know about radio, you love radio, you can write the radio ads for these new Levi's corduroy jeans. So we need 6 radio commercials, 30 seconders and 60 seconders. So basically I came into radio as a copywriter writing for an advertising agency, whether it was George Jensen Jewelers or Levi's or British Leyland, as they were called then, writing that sort of thing, Land Rover adverts and things like that. And then suddenly a job came up saying, you know, brand new radio station to start in West Sydney, 2WS. So it was AM radio station.
Welcome to day one of Sydney's first commercial new radio station in 46 years, 2WS.
And I went and talked to them, and they said, would you like to be the creative director, with working with 3 other copywriters producing the radio and producing the ads? And then I started doing voices on the ads. And then I suddenly went, oh, this is actually quite, this is a good way to get into radio. It wasn't like a big plan, but I suddenly thought, and they said, oh, why don't you do Midnight to Dawn one night if you want to do it? We need someone who can fill in. So one minute I'm the creative director writing ads for 2WS, and the next minute I'm doing Midnight to Dawn.
1224. 2WS.
So suddenly I'm writing ads, but also suddenly I'm kind of the DJ. And because it was a new radio station in Sydney, you could actually chuck in a few new tracks. So it was around about the time when Ian Drury and the Blockheads had sort of Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll and Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick. So I would throw in things like that, which were a little bit kind of left of centre, but actually became hits anyway.
In the deserts of Sudan.
And I'm continuing to be the copywriter. And then I'm on the radio and I'm doing little sketches and little send-up commercials, so like sort of adverts for products that don't really exist. And then I got the opportunity to work for the ABC on a new youth network, a bit like, I guess, Radio 1 was or is now. It was Double J, which was this new outrageous young people's radio network on the Australian Broadcasting Network. So it started off as AM, and now it was, then it went national and to FM, and that's where I went from AM radio to FM radio.
On behalf of everybody at Double J, welcome. Guess who's nervous? Nervous as can be. My name is Holger Brockman, alias Bill Drake, and let's go.
There I was at 2WS working, doing my little radio shows and also still working during the day as a copywriter. I met a guy who used to come in and do voiceovers and worked also at Channel 7 on the TV. And he said, oh, you've got a good sense of humor and would you be interested in doing a screen test for a new kids TV show? Which is, I guess, for people listening in the UK, a bit like Blue Peter. So it was like a current affairs show for kids looking for reporters. They wanted two boys and two girls. I was about 21. I had my little radio experience, my advertising experience. So one Saturday morning, I found myself with a cameraman in Hyde Park in Sydney, in the middle of Sydney, shooting a screen test, basically anything I wanted to do. I had a hand mic and a cameraman. And then suddenly I get told, how would you like to be a reporter on this kids TV show 5 days a week on the 10 network around Australia? It's only a 6-month contract. It's 13 weeks. The show may be successful. It may not be successful. So I'm going, okay. I talked to my mum and dad and I said, shall I give up a well-paid job as a copywriter on 2WS working on the radio 5 days a week and being on the radio and making ads? Or do I chuck it all in for 13 weeks on a TV show around Australia, which may finish after 13 weeks? And I was very, very lucky because I was highly thought of and had a great boss at 2WS. And he said, look, Jono, go and do it. And if it fails after 13 weeks, I'm sure we'll find a job for you back here at 2WS. I went off. I said goodbye to everybody. I went and worked on this show called Wonderworld, Simon Townsend's Wonderworld. And suddenly it took off and I did that for 5 years, so I was on national TV Monday to Friday every day. If you believe anything can happen. It was kind of like not a real kind of kidsy show. It was sort of aimed at sort of 8 to 13, 14, 15, 16-year-olds. And it was the first TV show in Australia that played a whole music video in the afternoon. So there was this rock and roll music element to it. So it instantly became popular with hungover musicians who wake up in the afternoon to watch TV. So they always used to watch Wonderworld at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Then I thought, right, I wouldn't mind doing a radio show as well, so I can be a Wonderworld reporter. And then I went and had a meeting with the ABC again, not commercial radio, but Triple J. They just got their FM licenses. They'd gone from AM to Double J to Triple J.
But as of 11 o'clock tomorrow, Double J will be no more and Triple J will be on its own. As an AM station, Double J was plagued with transmission problems, and many people are still.
I had a meeting with the boss, and he said, all right, he knew me from Wonderworld, knew I'd worked in radio beforehand. He said, would you like to do a show Saturday night, 9 till midnight? Just give it a go, do a few weeks, see how you feel. We'll see what we think of you, and you see what you think of us. And I said, but I don't really understand these panels that you've got at the ABC, because it was more of an English-style panel as opposed to what I was used to using in 2WS out in the west of Sydney. And he said, oh, don't worry, we'll organise a panel operator for you. And that was a guy called Ian Rogerson. His nickname was Dano. And then I did this show with him. We had like a sort of 5 or 10 minute meeting when I got there. And he basically wasn't supposed to speak. And by link two, it was like, so that's fantastic. That's Cool for Cats from Squeeze. And in fact, I'll just, Dano, what did you think of that? And it was like, suddenly, Dano is the other voice on the show. He was already doing radio anyway, but he was supposed to just be there to keep me on the air and stop me from going off air. And that's how Jono and Dano was kind of born, because we had a great rapport on the air. I called him Dano Mabuto, who was like my Fijian offsider, and they loved it. And they said, can you do it every Saturday night? So that was the beginning of being on network TV every day on a kids TV show, interviewing The Cure 1 minute and interviewing penguins at the zoo another minute and just having an amazing time. All the stuff was shot out and about, so it was all shot on film, 16 mil film on location. And then Saturday nights, Dano and I would do Off the Record with Jono and Dano, which was this crazy show that maybe we'd say 1 week we were coming from Fiji, another week we said we were on the Sydney Harbour Bridge in one of the bridge pylons, and a honk when you're driving over the bridge. And so we just had this complete sort of crazy, imaginative, theatre of the mind Saturday night radio show. After doing Jono and Dano on the radio for quite a few years on Triple J, and then making the sellout move, as a lot of people said in Sydney. We went from Triple J working for the good old ABC, a bit like the BBC, and then we got offered bigger money to go to Triple M, Triple's Your Music in Sydney, and we had the number one nighttime radio show in Sydney. We had, like, at one stage we had 65% of the available audience. Literally, it was unbelievable because there was only AM radio stations and then there was two FMs in Sydney, Triple M and Today. And Today FM was very sort of smooth. And here's a little bit of, you know, Phil Collins. It was all love songs. And Jono and Dano were playing, you know, Genesis or Phil Collins, and you know, like we were playing the loud side of things, and Midnight Oil and Hunters and Collectors and the Beatles and the Stones and stuff. So we were very successful. Out of that became a Jono and Dano TV show.
Oh geez, what are yous doing here?
Late Night with Jono and Dano, 10:30 Saturday night. What are you doing here?
By 1989, I thought, oh look, I've got to do something else. I mean, I love working with Dano and I love doing the radio and the TV, but I just thought my exciting part of my life, I just thought I don't want to become part of the furniture in Australia, because I'd been on TV in Australia literally from 1979 to this was 1989. So 10 years nonstop on the radio and the TV, basically one way or the other. I sent videotapes to Timmy Mallett and various people in the UK and people that I knew in radio in London, and videotapes and audio tapes. And then I get this phone call saying, Jono, Timmy Mallett gave me your tape, your videotape. We think it's fantastic. How would you like to come to London and do a show on satellite TV, on British Satellite Broadcasting? You'll have your own show. Boy George has got a show called Blue Radio. Suggs from Madness has got a show called Suggs on Saturday. We'd like you to do a show like four nights a week. Come to London. And you know, I had a British passport because I was a British citizen still and an Australian citizen. So I thought, if I'm ever going to jump ship from Australia, jump while I'm on the top. My big dream was to go and work in America on TV or radio. So I'd already been talking to the David Letterman show and the producers, and my dream was go on the David Letterman show or do something like that. It wasn't really going to England because I thought, oh, I've got a passport and I'm allowed to work in England. That's too easy. And then suddenly I get this job offered. I just got married to my wife, Margot. She's Australian, and she was working with a guy called Alex Proyas, who was a very famous sort of video director and commercials director who went on to do a lot of feature films like I, Robot with Will Smith and lots of movies. But she worked with Alex Proyas on TV commercials and also big budget music videos. I said to Margot, we've just got married. It was 1990. Do you fancy getting on a plane and we'll go to England and let's give it 6 months and see what happens? And we got there June 1990. I started working on the power station. So that 6 months of speculative kind of employment became 16 years and two children born in London. And it was sort of like, wow, that really worked out. The amazing thing about, you know, arriving in the UK, I was lucky because I had a job to go to at the power station. Not that that lasted for that long. It only lasted for about a year or so. Palace Pictures sold it to Arabic Broadcasting and it became a sort of Arab movie channel, I think. We were in Parsons Green, but I flew over to London with Margot and also with a guy called Charlie Cox. And it was when Mike Carlton was coming to work on LBC in London. So basically, I was on the plane with Mike Carlton and Charlie Cox. Charlie Cox said to me, well, look, I'm going to run this thing for Crown Broadcasting LBC. It's a sort of talk radio station in London. Do you want to do some radio while you're over there? And I'm going, oh, no, that'd be good. So I ended up writing little comedy sketches and voicing them for LBC. That was the first thing I did on British radio. And it was an experience because people were sort of going, oh, here's more of these bloody Australians coming over here telling us what to do and how to do it. You either had that attitude or they were saying, you know, we love Australian radio. That's fantastic. We just love the way that you guys are sort of, yeah, we can do that. No worries. Let's do it. And I would do sort of little sketches for Mike Carlton's breakfast radio show on LBC. And through that connection, I met quite a lot of people at LBC, and I met people who were involved on BBC Radio London, as it's now called, I think, and it was GLR. So I met Richard Skinner, I met Tommy Vance and Danny Baker and Chris Evans. Chris Evans was also working on the Power Station, which was the music channel. I think he did a show called Power Up, which was like a kind of breakfast music morning show. And I was doing the nighttime show. So that was my first experience mid-1990 when Chris Evans was basically sort of unknown, but he was doing a show on GLR. I started listening to GLR, which reminded me a lot of Triple J, the music, the attitude. You know, you got people like Tommy Vance and Richard Skinner and Danny Baker and Chris Evans and Chris Morris. I met Chris Morris and people like that. And then Trevor Dan met me. He said, oh, bloody Australians, another Australian. He said, I must be the only person in London who's got no intention and no interest of ever going to Australia. I hate the sunshine, I hate neighbours, and I hate home and away. But anyway, apart from that, do you want to do some fill-in work?
John in Hazelmere wanted to know how much it costs to run GLR.
Your licence fee costs you £77 right. a year. 2% of the whole lot goes to fund your local radio
Richard
station.
Richard Skinner was sick, or Richard Skinner had to go off and do something else. So I got a gig doing some fill-in for Richard Skinner. Out of that, I got sort of fill-in work on weekends on GLR. So I was on before Chris and his missus. Around at Chris's with his missus, I was on before them. I got there in the morning to switch on the transmitter. They had to teach me how to switch on the GLR transmitter on a Saturday morning and a Sunday morning. Used to play something called the Oasis, which was like just this kind of music, which was kind of chilled out music. And then you had to turn off the Oasis and say, hi, it's BBC London 94.9 GLR. And coming up next, Nick Abbott or something like that. So that was my foray into UK radio. GLR. When I first walked into GLR, it was very exciting because there I was, commercial radio guy, bit of a big noise from Australia, famous in Australia, but absolutely unknown in the UK, absolutely unknown in London. I became known because I, you know, was putting out pictures of me and Jason Donovan or me and Kylie from my TV show in Australia. So a story ran in the Sun newspaper. I put on a sort of little publicist, Chris Poole publicity, got this photograph of me and Jason Donovan, and I was in bed in a hotel in Sydney interviewing Jason Donovan. I guess it was those in-bed interviews before they started doing one, The Big Breakfast. I sort of stole the idea from In Bed with Madonna, I think. So anyway, I interviewed Jason in bed, and then this photograph ran of me in bed with Jason Donovan in the Sun, and it was like, oh, what a gay g'day. Aussie TV star interviews Jason and outrages UK and Australian Neighbours fans, disgusted, blah, 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 blah. So that was about the only bit of publicity I ever had in the UK before I went in to do my little fill-in shows on GLR. It was very exciting because, A, it was working for the BBC, and I just thought, wow, this is incredible. Even though I'd come from working on Triple J, which was the ABC, but it was that Australian thing, you know, you always thought that was the tall poppy syndrome, they call it in Australia. It's like Paul Hogan goes to America, gets incredibly famous, is a huge success, and they go, yeah, well, you know, he would, wouldn't he? Because, you know, it's that yada, 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 tall poppy syndrome. He might be pretty good in America, but, you know, so-and-so wasn't successful in Australia. And I guess Australians always have that sort of, they slightly put themselves down. But me, coming from being quite a big star on Australian TV and radio to going to the UK as nobody, going to work for satellite TV, I wasn't working for Sky, I was working for Squareels.
Britain's newest satellite TV station, BSB, will find out later tonight whether the launch of its transmitting satellite was successful. It's been blasted into space from Cape Canaveral, but it will be some hours yet before it reaches its planned orbit.
And we were sort of seen as the second-class citizens slightly, even though DMAC was a great system, I think. And, you know, we had a lot of Scottish football, so we had a lot of viewers in Scotland. But walking into GLR and actually having one of those BBC visitors passes, it was like all my Christmases had come at once. It was just, you know, then meeting Danny Baker and, you know, I knew Chris Evans from the power station. It was fantastic because, you know, Emma Freud was there and the people that you'd heard on the radio, because I was quite a big GLR listener by that stage anyway. It was worthy, but it was also outrageous because they would have fantastic guests. And I used to love Danny Baker's show, and I loved Chris Morris's show.
Of course, the tricky thing about condoms is how to put one on. Well, in a brief, generous burst of public service radio, I could show you how. If only I could find something to demonstrate with. Bah! This microphone will do. Okay, right, all you do is you put it on the end, squeeze out the air from the top, and then slowly
I had to fill in for Chris Morris's show once when he was sick, and I remember ringing him at home on the air in a sort of Chris Morris fashion, and he said, what are you doing? I said, hi, Chris, I'm just looking after your radio show for you. Just want to see what you think. And he said, I'm sick, fuck off. And I thought, okay, that didn't go too well. It was very exciting being at GLR. And Trevor Dan was a great boss because he basically let you just get on with it. And, you know, and he said, oh, that was pretty good. I like that or whatever. And I said, do you think it's all right if I ring Morris at home? He said, yeah, give it a go. The worst thing that can happen is he'll hang up on you. I can't remember if it went to air or not. That's the sad part. I think my face just went white.
Hello, Chris.
How are you?
Very sad.
Have you got your tape running?
Yeah.
You've got a tape running.
Very sadly, yeah.
Okay, Tanya, who do you fancy?
Mark Goodyear.
Mark Goodyear.
I really couldn't think of anyone else. I'd rather shag, you see.
No wonder you're really sad there. Okay, then, so, okay, Mark's out one for Mark Goodyear.
Chris Evans was great. I mean, we always got on very well. In the early days, Chris was a lot more humble, and I think he's a lot more sort of down to earth now. He did go through a very big sort of lost in showbiz stage, which I did as well. Chris was great. I mean, he was full of ideas and full of passion and, you know, hardworking northern bloke, talked about his mum a lot, and, you know, he said, I'm going to buy my mum a house one day, and he did all those sorts of things. So I think he was great in the GLR days. It was good fun. I remember, actually, Chris Evans, I think he used to have a Saab, and he used to get it signed by all the guests that were on his radio show on GLR and also signed by guests that were on the TV show on the power station. And I remember he gave that away. I think it may have been on GLR. It was a prize, and I thought that was a great idea, giving away your own car when you're about to buy the new one.
Capital Breakfast 95.8 FM 1548 AM. After 8 o'clock this morning, various bits and pieces, including how the colour of your car is a key to what sort of person you are and why red car drivers are supposedly the sexiest on the road.
And Tarrant, when I finally met Tarrant, you know, I used to make jokes about Tarrant and, you know, it was time for changing of the guard and all that kind of stuff. I remember Tarrant always used to say, Jono, my dear boy, it's like a gentleman's club, you know. You and Russ, myself and Wogan, we're all very, very lucky. We're members of an elite and special gentleman's club, and I always remembered that. I mean, that was a fantastic period in my life because I was still doing, you know, satellite TV, and GLR got me a bit of exposure to people who didn't have square reels. And through meeting people like Chris Evans and Danny Baker, all those BBC types would suddenly go, hello, it's Lucinda here from BBC Television Centre. I was wondering if you'd be interested, Jono, you know, you're an Aussie. Could you come on to Noel's house party or do a little barbecue segment for us on, you know, Esther Ranson's show and things like that? So being on BBC radio, suddenly you're on the radar of BBC researchers on TV shows. So I got a lot of opportunities to be the token Aussie. When Clive James wanted too much money or you know, Edna Everidge or, you know, Barry Humphries wasn't interested in doing it for less than £30,000, they'd ring up either me or Kathy Lett. And then this new radio station was about to start up called Virgin Radio. And the people who were going to Virgin Radio were John Revel, who I used to work with at GLR, and Richard Skinner. and Tommy Vance in his leather pants. That I used to say, Tommy Vance, he'd say, shut up, you bloody Australian idiot. And suddenly I got a phone call saying, would you like to come over and do a bit of a demo and have a bit of a chat with us over here at in number one Golden Square and be part of Virgin? Long story short, did a bit of a demo for a, you know, mound of sound, I was known as. Jono Coleman, the mound of sound, the thunder from down under. And I got offered a job by David Campbell to do, I think it was coming on after Tommy Vance in the afternoon and doing this evening show. One minute I'd be doing this evening show, and this was like about a couple of months before Virgin even went on air, Virgin 1215. Oh, who did I have? Meatloaf. Me and Meatloaf co-hosted a show. I had to learn how to do another panel. Who else came in? Alice Cooper. Good position, because they either knew me from Australian TV if they were international music people like Cyndi Lauper and people like that. They'd say, hey, I remember you from that show you used to do in Australia. So I accepted this job. Very little money from David Campbell at Virgin Radio, Virgin 1215. And then they did that big thing when they did the test broadcast with only 10 days left till Virgin 1215.
2 minutes and counting to the radio revolution.
You know, Great Britain's great new radio station. Only 5 days to go.
1 minute and counting to the radio revolution. 1 minute and counting to the official launch of Virgin 1215.
And I was on just before. I think Richard Skinner was the first person on air at 12:15 o'clock. So it went to air at 15 minutes after 12 on that day in London and all over the UK. And I think In Excess was the first song we played.
Hello to everyone here in Manchester and across the UK. It's 12:15 on Friday, April 30th, 1993, a date which will go down, we hope, in broadcasting history. I'm Richard Branson, and this is the radio station I've always wanted to hear. I hope you'll find it the station you too have always wanted to hear. Virgin 12:15 is now officially on the air! Born to be
wild. Basically, I think about 3 months into the station starting, or maybe less, they said, how would you like to go and keep Russ company? This guy, Russ Williams, who I think was doing the breakfast show. Because I think it was sounding just a little bit sort of one-handed, and they said, let's try that sort of idea of what they do in America and what they do in Australia. Double-handed breakfast show. And we actually had a good time. We hit it off. And then they said, would you like to do breakfast with Russ? And that was the beginning of, I don't know how many years we did it, 6 years or 7 years of the Russ and Jono breakfast experience. We did a book. We did many, many TV appearances. We helped Noel Edmonds do a Gotcha Oscar on Jeremy Clarkson. We had Jeremy Clarkson in a helicopter one morning doing the Virgin traffic reports. And everything started unraveling because we didn't know it was all being filmed for a Gotcha Oscar on Jeremy Clarkson, but not just a Gotcha Oscar on Jeremy Clarkson, but a Gotcha on Russ and Jono live on Virgin Radio. So we got a Gotcha. I still got it at home in Sydney. Russ and Jono got a Gotcha, and so did Clarkson. We had this crazy Noel Edmonds hidden downstairs in another office at Virgin, pretending to be someone who was like the helicopter pilot.
Welcome to the house party live from Crinkley Bottom. Yes, we're back. Already?
Suddenly, I'm on 12:15 Virgin on a brand new radio station. So I was just like a pig in mud, as they say. It was fantastic. Myself and Russ doing breakfast for that long. I mean, we were up against Chris Evans. We were up against Steve Wright. We went to a radio conference. I think it was in Birmingham, and I got arrested. Russ and I were doing the breakfast show live from Birmingham from this big radio conference. And Steve Wright was doing his Radio 1 breakfast show. This is how long ago it was. And we had this crazy idea along with Matthew Freud from Freud Publicity, who was doing our publicity for us. And I said, why don't we take some sheep into the live audience of Steve Wright's breakfast show on Radio 1, and we'll put them on in T-shirts saying, I'm a Radio 1 listener, like I'm a sheep. like along with everyone. And then Russ said, I don't want to be involved. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do it. I said, I'll do it. So Russ stayed in the hotel broadcasting, and he said, and all through the show we kept going, Jono's going to go downstairs in a moment. He's got a little stunt. He's going to try and get onto Steve Wright's Radio 1 breakfast show. So there I am with four sheep on strings and in T-shirts, Radio 1 T-shirts saying, I'm a Radio 1 listener. I dragged them across the road, and I got arrested by a policeman, two policemen actually, for endangering livestock. And I got an official caution from the police, and Richard Branson got one too because it was his radio station. And I don't think we got fined, but it was seen as a silly publicity stunt, which was all over all the newspapers of, you know, fat Aussie drags four sheep across the road to Steve Wright's breakfast show. And it was it, Steve Wright always remembers it. He goes, that stupid idea of taking those sheep into the... Ugh. But I mean, I love Steve Wright. He's a lovely guy, and I've been on his show many times on Radio 2.
Stuart Goddard and the Ants.
Yes.
And I was lucky enough to go to a gig at Abbey Road Studios the other day, and I thought I saw Adam Ant there, but it was in fact a waiter who looked just a bit like him.
I thought you were saying it was Ian Ryan the
whole time. Paul McCartney didn't turn up.
Virgin was fantastic fun because we were the larrikins. We were the sort of naughty boys of the new boys on the block, and we used to make lots of jokes about Tarrant because Russ used to be, you know, was at Capital for all that time. We used to make jokes about Pink. We used to make jokes about Chris Evans because Chris Evans was on Virgin doing the Big Red Mug Show, and then I think he left to go off and do his TV stuff, and then he ended up going on BBC Radio, I think.
Okay, I am the Big Red Mug with big red hair. Oh, yes, it is.
No, anyway, for some reason, we decided loudmouth Jono would make lots of jokes about Chris Evans, and then one time I got phoned up because Piers Morgan was doing a regular Friday gossip spot with Russ and Jono on Virgin, and he rang up. He said, "I know that you're now you think that Chris Evans is a bit of a rival now, and he's losing the plot slightly. He's not turning up for the show, and he's complaining that he's getting too tired because he's doing his TV show as well as doing a breakfast radio show." And then we did this thing when he said, we're just going to talk to a bunch of celebrities who are just going to give some advice to Chris Evans. You know, maybe don't surround yourself with Aldo Zilli and all these Holly Hot Lips and people laughing at all your jokes. And then it goes in the Mirror. This is when Piers Morgan was the editor of the Mirror. And it becomes like page two or page three in the Mirror, a full page, John O'Coleman's open letter to Chris Evans. And that was... Russ, I remember Russ going, "Oh mate, that's unbelievable." It was a dark day for the Coleman publicity machine. It wasn't my idea. I got stitched up by Piers Morgan. I bet no one's ever said that before. we did get into some scrapes of slagging off people, making fun of Tarrant and making fun of Chris Evans. I'm glad to say now, all these years after, I get on very well with Chris Evans, and I get on very well with Tarrant and Steve Wright. So I guess we all have short memories in radio.
Much more music, Virgin 1215.
It's in the mists of time because Chris Evans wanted to come back and do breakfast on Virgin, and he got in the ear of Richard Branson saying, I'll come on to Virgin, I'll come back to Virgin, but I want to do breakfast. I want to do breakfast my way. So I went off to Australia for my usual 4 weeks Christmas holiday. And we got taken off breakfast while I was away. I think I got one of those letters through my agent, who was John Knoll Management, saying, mate, you're not going to believe this, but they're taking you and Russ off breakfast and you're going to be doing drive time. I kind of felt disappointed and gutted at the time, but I suddenly thought, well, that's all right. You know, it's whether it works or not, who knows? And then we did drive on Virgin for a little while. And then I think I got, as we say in Australia, bone from drive, because I was a little unruly one Friday afternoon. I brought in a few beers for Russ, and it was when the Australian Ian Grace had taken over as the sort of consultant at Virgin Radio, mate, and you can't have alcohol in the, and I'd been out for a bit of a boozy lunch, and long story short, I think I got one of those letters saying, your tenure at Virgin Radio is gone. And I think Russ ended up staying at Virgin Radio and becoming the oldest DJ that ever worked on Virgin Radio, stayed for about another 50 or 60 years. I was suddenly boned. I was out in radio cold land. It was very disappointing at the time. It was mad because I thought what they've done is they basically kept Russ there to be Russ Williams, and then they've kind of taken apart the Russ and Jono magic, which had worked for sort of 6 or 7 years, and brought us very close to being the number one radio show in London. And I think we beat Tarrant a couple of times, or, you know, our closest time of having like a couple of million listeners at least across a week. So it was disappointing, but I didn't hold it against Russ at the time. I just thought it was foolish and a mistake. And then suddenly I get this phone call via my agent, John Knoll, saying, do you want to go and have a chat with Keith Pringle and the boys over at Heart? And it's like, oh, okay. Heart 106.2. I like Gabrielle. I like Boyzone or whatever it was. And suddenly I'm the new guy working with Cara Noble on Heart 106.2 and doing the breakfast show, Jono and the Morning Crew. And that lasted for about 7 years as well. And suddenly I was on Heart 106.2, had my breakfast show up against the guys over there at Virgin. So it couldn't have come at a better time. And it was a large amount of money that helped me pay off a number of mortgages.
Looking forward to the underwater bowlings, always good fun. The opening ceremony is 5 to 1 Saturday morning, and who's singing at the opening ceremony? Ooh. Our favourite, Vaseline Dion will be singing.
I started hard on the breakfast show. It was David Prever, the lovely David Prever, and Cara Noble, and it was funny because I don't think Cara Noble really loved the idea of working with me, because I think she was lured over to Heart to be kind of the new Chris Tarrant. You know, she was fed up with being the Chris Tarrant second fiddle as the traffic chick. And so she went to Heart for big things, and they didn't really happen in a huge way. And David Prever and her tried their best to get the thing happening. And then suddenly it was like, Jono, can you come over and do the breakfast show with Cara?
A brisk northeasterly breeze and the temperature climbing to 25 degrees, 77 Fahrenheit, sunshine all day long.
And then there was that day where Cara did a deal to sell some photographs of a now princess to the British tabloid, The Sun. Suddenly, there was no more Cara. She was the most hunted and hated woman in London because she sold these photographs to the, you know, the original story was that she was going to give them to Sophie Rhys-Jones. Or Sophie. She was going to give them to Sophie to do whatever she wanted with them, and they were going to destroy them. It was going to be a publicity stunt to burn the photographs. There were photographs of Sophie and Chris Tarrant on some Hong Kong capital OB and larking around, and breasts were on show and all that kind of stuff. And they were never planned to be in the newspapers. And then the next thing we know, Cara's been told she's fired. The pictures, the front four pages of the Sun newspaper, because I get told, don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. Just go into work. There was about 9,000 photographers, live TV crews out the front and out the back of the Chrysalis building in West London. And I'm going, oh my God, that was the biggest media circus I'd ever been in. And within an hour, they said, Cara's not coming back. She won't be coming in today. Don't talk about it. And then they rang me back, the program director, saying, okay, Tarrant is letting loose all over Capital. You can talk about it. And then that's when I started working with Erica North and then Harriet Scott and then Emma Forbes. So the Heart Breakfast Show was a revolving door of lovely ladies. It was fantastic. I love working with all of them. I mean, Emma Forbes was great. And then she got lured to go away from Heart to go over to Capital. Erica North had been waiting in the wings and was always the fill-in person. And then Erica and I started doing the show, which was very, very successful. The Girl Next Door, Erica North. And then Harriet Scott and I did it for a long time as well.
You think I don't wake up every morning and wonder what the hell is going on?
It's Jono and Harriet at breakfast.
And then suddenly I get a phone call from Frances Currie saying, Jono, now that you've won all these awards and you have the second and first most listened to breakfast show in London, we've decided to take Heart a bit younger in age group, and Harriet's going to be staying. So Frances Currie said, Jamie Theakston has accepted an offer to come and do the breakfast show. So it'll be Harriet and Jamie, but it's going to leak out into the papers. I wanted to ring you at home first before you heard it from anyone else. I said, oh, thanks, Francis. And so what's the situation? He said, well, we'd like you to work at LBC. Stay with Chrysalis and then we'll give you a show on LBC, like a weekend breakfast show or something like that. And I said, well, I think you're going to have to do better than that. And he said, but anyway, what I wanted to talk to you about was that it seems now that Jamie Thixton can't start for 3 months. So in light of all that, would you be willing to stay on for an extra 3 months now that I've just fired you? Could you still stay on? And I said, Francis, I'd be happy to stay on for an extra 3 months on the same money, and they will be the best 3 months' worth of shows that myself and Harriet have ever done. We had Tony Blair on. We had all sorts of huge guests on the show. And Francis said, I've got to say, you've been incredibly professional, blah-de, blah-de, blah. And, you know, we put a happy face on it all. I was disappointed again after all the hard work of the Heart Breakfast Show and taking it up to basically the number one spot in lots and lots of age groups. And, you know, Harriet and her new co-host did pretty well. And now Harriet's gone and it's Emma Bunton. Harriet's doing her show with Ronan Keating. Never burn any bridges. You know, one bit of bad news turns into a good news. And suddenly I'm doing weekend breakfast on LBC. And then suddenly I get a phone call from my agent, still John Knoll, saying, how would you like to go and do the breakfast show on BBC London 94.9? I'm going, my God, this is like a roundabout. So the next thing I know, I'm walking out of the LBC deal. And BBC London puts me on and Chrysalis says, no, we won't let you take him and put him on breakfast. So I do Danny Baker's show on BBC London for a while, which was GLR, which is now BBC London or whatever it's called. And then Chrysalis were a little bit upset and disappointed that I walked away from LBC, which was just weekend breakfast. And then suddenly I'm the breakfast show guy up against Virgin, up against Heart. And I start doing the breakfast show with Joanne Good, and we had a fantastic time. So I have been a very, very lucky little fat bunny.
A double whammy. BBC London 94.9, a fresh perspective. And I tell you what,
It goes back to that original feeling of walking in the hallowed doors of Broadcasting House at the BBC, and you kind of go, wow. And we just had fantastic fun. And then suddenly you're kind of going, who we got on? We've got so-and-so coming in, and we've got that guest, and we've got the guys from INXS want to come on the show, and, oh, Meatloaf's coming in again. Hey, weren't you at Virgin? Or it's like there's this sort of swinging, revolving door of guests. It was fantastic going back to BBC London because it was like old home week, and I thought, well, they offered me a two-year contract, and I tried to do the whole 2 years. I ended up having to come back to Sydney after about a year and a half, only because my mum was getting sick and I just wanted to spend the last couple of years with her and have the kids, who were sort of like 12 and 13 at that stage, spend as much time with their grandma as possible. And Margot was a bit homesick, but you know, we still come backwards and forwards to the UK. We're coming to the UK later this year as well. So it was fantastic going back to BBC London because, you know, suddenly I'm being asked to go back on Steve Wright's show and going on Radio 2. And I mean, the opportunity to be on Radio 2 and becoming a regular guest on Loose Ends with Ned Sheeran. I mean, just the people that I've met and the people I've sat next to on Loose Ends, I still kind of pinch myself.
Mr. Eric Sykes, Sir John Mortimer, Sir Peter O'Sullivan, Sir Jimmy Young, Marvin Hamlisch, Clive James, Tony Bennett, Timothy West, Stephen Frears, Diana Quick.
When I was in England, there was a wedding between Dr. Carl, or Dr. Carl's daughter. It was Natalie Bathingthwaite, and it was Neil Morrissey and myself. Neil Morrissey was the sort of celebrant, and I was on this boat going down the Thames for this neighbour's wedding. And it was me and Sunita. How surreal is that? It was me and Sunita, and they said, oh, excuse me, Jono, Sunita, would you come on and be, you have to be an official witness at the wedding, this neighbour's wedding. So, yes, I was on an episode of Neighbours. I've also been on Home and Away as myself, and I've also been on QI now too. You know, I filled in for Steve Wright. Steve Wright was doing a world service show called Right Round the World. I found these CDs the other day, and it's me hosting that show on World Service. And they're just opportunities you don't get in Australia to suddenly sit there and you're talking to the rest of the world on a radio show. And even when I was on Heart, when they did their big radio hookup for the tsunami, we all went into Capitol Studios, and it was Johnny Vaughan and me and Harriet and Russ and everybody was involved in that big radiothon for Tsunami. You know, I've been very, very lucky and I've had so many incredible opportunities just by working in the UK for 16 years.
Tony Blair's giving his backing to UK Radio Aid, the biggest commercial radio fundraising event ever. More than 200 radio stations across the country, including LBC News 1152, will be joining forces.
We came back to Australia in 2007, end of 2007. I'd been doing a regular syndicated show from London called My Generation, which was on 100 stations around Australia on Saturday mornings, sometimes with Katrina from Katrina and the Waves or the dreaded Meatloaf again, co-hosting or just guest hosts or just me from various radio stations. And it was my generation kept going, even when I was in England, because I'd record all the links and I'd send it over to the satellite to Australia and somebody would build it at MCM in Melbourne and that would go out all every Saturday on 100 stations around Australia. And when I came back, I started doing breakfast TV. I'm still on Studio 10, which is a national breakfast TV show in Australia. I was doing it 5 days a week, and now I've sort of pulled back a bit because I'm just getting a bit tired.
A very exciting time for ABBA fans.
Oh, yeah.
ABBA came to Australia for the first time ever and the last time ever, unfortunately, 1977.
And up until a few months ago, I was doing nighttime a national radio show on Talking Lifestyle, and I'm actually still doing bits and pieces on Sydney Radio, on the Two Johns. It's community radio, FM. We get to play whatever we want to do and talk to whoever we want to talk to. We had Midjura on the other day, so it's kind of like nothing much has really changed. So I'm doing breakfast TV, and whenever there's guests needed on British radio shows, I get a phone call from Talk Radio UK. I was on the radio with Paul Ross the other day, with Howard Hughes last week, talking about what's going on in Australia. When anyone gets eaten by a shark or something lovely or horrible happens in Australia, I get phoned up by Steve Wright's show. Oh, when the recent Australian cricket disaster of ball tampering happened, there was Jeremy Vine's show on the radio, just like so. I'm the sort of go-to guy when there's Australian scandal. I think I'm a very, very lucky person to end up working on BBC Radio, on Virgin Radio, having Richard Branson as my boss, still friendly with Richard Branson, still friendly with Chris Wright, still friendly with Russ Williams. I've just been blessed by some incredible opportunities and loved it all, and I wouldn't give it up for the world. I've got two lovely kids, both grown up, and I'm still working on the radio and on the TV. I just think the only regrets are I probably had a bit of an ego. I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder, less than a chip, more of a whole forest at one stage. And I think a lot of Australians have got egos, but anyone in show business, you know, people would say the same about Chris Evans, people would say the same about Noel Edmonds. I think anyone who's in a position where you're going, I can't believe, I mean, how many rock and roll stars have I met over the years, from Michael Hutchins to John Lennon, Paul McCartney, Ringo, all because I was on the radio in the UK. How would I like to be remembered? As a funny guy who didn't take himself too seriously, and like all people in show business, just wanted to be liked and also wanted to get a laugh once in a while. And the fun thing in all my radio shows is I've made myself laugh, other people have made me laugh, and Robin Williams used to make me laugh a lot every time I was lucky enough to meet him. But I just think that if you're having fun, then you're number one. It doesn't matter whether you're number four or number three or number one. If you're enjoying yourself, that's part of the battle. And there's been so many pretend double acts and false chemistry on TV and radio. When you find one that actually works, it's like better than sex.